This is Marvin Curtis, your host for Lift Every Voice, celebrating the African-American spirit here on WUBS, sponsored by the South Bend Symphony Orchestra. Stay with us for the 10-week series on the life and love and creation of African-American music in America.
Talked about shows you born.
This is Marvin Curtis, your host for Lift Every Voice, celebrating the African-American spirit here on WUBS 89.7 FM, sponsored by the South Bend Symphony Orchestra. As we continue our discussion on black music, we've heard about African music from Africa. We've heard about the spiritual and the gospel. Today, we're going to take a little trip on something that's not necessarily church music, but it's called the blues. The blues is a musical form that emerged as early as the 1870s and stemmed from the hardship of African slaves encountering in the New World. At this time, the blues were largely universal in their lyrics, melodies, and phrases, leaving very few stylistic differences between one blues artist and the next. However, in the early 1920s, as the blues spread to a much broader region, it was no longer limited to the cotton fields of the South. Two different styles materialized, the country blues, what we call the city or urban blues. But the earliest record of blues music comes from the Mississippi River region between Memphis and New Orleans as early as 1900. Delta blues music was played by acoustical guitars, that's the guitar that's not plugged into the wall, who sang a 12-bar form similar to the prevailing blues style of the present day. Some also played the harmonica. Country blues was not limited to just the Mississippi Delta. Georgian Sonny Terry, Brownie McKee, Blind Willie McTell, and Blind Boy Fuller all made their mark on blues music in the early 20th centuries. A regional style called Piedmont blues involved precise guitar finger picking that mimicked the stride piano sounds of urban blues and jazz. In Texas, Blind Lemon Jefferson, Lightning Hopkins, and Robert Johnson, who was born in Mississippi, brought this musical virtuosity to the blues genre. The blues were songs about usually a man's predicament with another woman. And they were not religious songs. But we had, as I previously said, two types of blues, the country blues and or the city blues or urban blues. And in most cases, the country blues were sung only by men and used an acoustic guitar, not the electric guitar. So we're going to hear, talk about it, a young man named Blind Lemon Jefferson, who was born September of 1893 in Texas. And he was blind from birth, the youngest of seven children. He became an itinerant entertainer in his teens, learning to the repertoire of prison songs, blues, moans, spirituals, and dance numbers. He worked in the streets and the brothels and saloons and parties in Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and Virginia. In 1920, he went to Chicago. His high voice style, shouting style, and advanced guitar technique, which used melodic lead lines, bent notes, and imitative effects, as well as his lyrics and themes, became a staple of the blues. And he had such disciples as Lead Belly, who worked with Jefferson for a time through his recordings for the Paramount label from 1926 to 1929. Jefferson also recorded spiritual songs such using the pseudonym Deacon L.J. Bates. Among his best songs are Black Snake Moan, Mosquito Blues, See That My Grave Is Kept Clean, and Matchbox Blues. The circumstances of his death are uncertain, although there were reports that he suffered a heart attack on the streets and died of exposure. He was buried in Wortham, Texas, Negro Cemetery, and his grave went unmarked until October 15th, 1967, when blues devotees placed a metal marker on the plot. In 1997, it was replaced by a granite headstone. Since the late 1950s, numerous recordings of Blind Lemon Jefferson have been reissued, generating a new interest in his music. He was among the inaugural class of people inducted to the Blues Hall of Fame in 1980. Here is Matchbox Blues.
I'm going to the river, I'm going to walk down by the sea. I'm going to the river, walk down by the sea. I caught those tadpoles and minnows arguing over me. Then yeah, one day with a matchbox hold my soul. As then yeah, one day with a matchbox hold my soul. I ain't got so many matches, but I got so far to go. Lord, mama, who may your manager be? Hey, mama, who may your manager be? Be not so many questions, can't you make arrangements for me? Down, she crochet all the time. I got a girl across town, crochet all the time. Baby, if you don't quit crocheting, you're gonna lose your mind. I wouldn't mind marrying, but I can't stand settling down. I don't mind marrying, but Lord, settling down. I'm gonna act like a preacher so I can ride from town to town. But I'm leaving town. I won't make me stay. I leave in town, yeah, crying won't make me stay. Baby, the more you cry, the further you drive me away.
The Matchbox Blues of Blind Lemon Jefferson. Country blues is largely known as functional music. It was exclusive to the enslaved Africans' task at hand of chopping trees, laying railroad tracks, and picking cotton. There were chants and field hollers that helped the enslaved Africans keep their minds off the monotonous work they were performing. It also served as a means of mourning the poor quality of life they were faced with, and their lyrics expressed that. However, the city blues or urban blues was an art music and was used for no other purpose than pure entertainment. It was played in the brothels and saloons of the cities like Chicago and New Orleans. Because of the booming economy during the Roaring Twenties, people in the city weren't interested in hearing the gloom and despondency of the slave songs, so the blues artists adopted an upbeat tempo. It was played as a means of rejoicing and to keep people dancing. The lyrics were also very telling of which school the blues artists came from. And so we'll talk about that a little bit later. But right now we're going to talk about a woman who was known for her blues singing and became known as Empress of the Blues, the mother of the blues, I should say, the name of Gertrude Ma Rainey. Ma Rainey was known for her deep-throated voice and mesmerizing stage presence that drew packed audiences and sold hit records in the early 20th century. Also a songwriter, her lyrics and melodies reflected her experience as an independent, openly bisexual African-American woman. She was born Gertrude Melissa Nix Bridget in Columbus, Georgia, on April 26, 1886. Her parents, Thomas and Ellen, were minstrel performers, and we know about the minstrel shows where those people that wore blackface. So as an African-American, you had to wear blackface to be on a minstrel show. And that was the characterization of black people made by white people. She made her debut with a group called Bunch of Blackberries at the Springer Opera House in Columbus, Ohio, Columbus, Georgia, I'm sorry. She then began singing with traveling vaudeville acts in tent shows, honky-tonks, and carnivals. It was on a performance circuit that she met comedian, singer, dancer Will Paul Rainey, and the two married in 1904. They formed a double act, Ma and Pa Rainey, and toured with various African-American minstrel troupes and vaudeville groups, most notably the Rabbit Foot Minstrels. After about a dozen years of marriage, Rainey and her husband separated. She then created her own show, Madame Gertrude Ma Rainey and her Georgia Smart Set. Ma Rainey was influential in bridging the traditions of vaudeville and authentic Southern blues. The blues transcended from the call-and-response storytelling songs of West Africa that captive Africans had passed out through generations while enslaved in the Western Hemisphere. Ma Rainey's strong voice and characteristic moaning style of singing also fueled her success. A vibrant stage presence, she was known for her gold teeth, flashy clothing, and jewelry, and establishing a personal connection with her audiences. Life as a traveling entertainer was not easy for African Americans in the early decades of the 20th century, though the Inner Owners Booking Association arranged many of their performances. They were well known for the exploitative work conditions and low wages it paid African American performers. Many eventually claimed that the Theater Owners Booking Association, TOBA, stood for Tough on Black Artists. Still, Ma Rainey was a star on that circuit. She attracted large audiences of adoring fans across the South and the Midwest. Her performances drew racially mixed, though still segregated, audiences, demonstrating her wide appeal. Her two-hour show usually began with jazz numbers by the band, performance by a line of chorus girls. After comedy routines and other acts, Ma Rainey would make her entrance and dazzle the audience with songs like I Ain't Got Nobody, A Good Band Is Hard to Find, and her encore, C.C. Rider Blues. She signed a recording contract with Paramount Records in 1923, making her one of the earliest blues recording musicians. Between 1923 and 1928, she recorded almost 100 records. Many of them national hits that are now part of the American musical canon. Her 1924 recording of C.C. Rider Blues was added to the Library of Congress's National Recording Registry in 2004. And on that particular piece, she was accompanied by a young man named Louis Armstrong. And so, here is Ma Rainey in all of her glory. Thank you.
watch me sooner or later. Gonna catch you with your britches down. You abuse me and mistreat me. You dawdle around and treat me. Then I'm gonna hang around. Take all my money, black up both of my eyes. Give it to another woman. Come home and tell me lies. You low down alligator, just watch me sooner or later. Gonna catch you with your britches.
Ma Rainey, the mother of the blues. It was during this time period that as the migration from African Americans from the South to the North, that the churches also began to see this kind of music as not great music. And if you saw The Color Purple, you remember that Chuck Avery was a blues singer, and her father just disowned her in many ways because of that. And so, and the blues was also sung in nightclubs and brothels and other places. And so a good church person did not go to hear the blues. And also, many of the women who were blues singers were considered to be not of Christian value because they had, they wore clothing that was different, exposing their bodies in many ways. And again, the place the blues was sung was taverns, brothels, bars. And that was not considered to be a good place for a good church person to be. But they were very popular, and the recording sold. But from Ma Rainey came another woman named Bessie Smith. And Bessie Smith was born April 15, 1894, in Chattanooga, Tennessee. She was one of seven children. Her father, a Baptist minister, died soon after her birth, leaving her mother to raise her and her siblings. Around 1906, her mother and two of her brothers died, and Smith and her remaining siblings were raised by an aunt. It was around this time that Smith began to perform as a street singer, accompanied on the guitar by one of her younger brothers. In 1912, Bessie Smith began performing as a dancer in the Moses Stokes Minstrel Show. Again, notice the word minstrel show. And soon thereafter, in the Rabbit Foot Minstrels, a term we heard earlier, in which the blues vocalist Ma Rainey was a member. Ma Rainey took Smith under her wing, and over the next decade, Bessie Smith continued to perform at various theaters and on the vaudeville circuit. By the early 1920s, Bessie Smith had settled down and was living in Philadelphia. In 1923, she married a man named Jack Gee. That same year, she was discovered by a representative from Columbia Records, who then signed her on a contract and made her the first song recording. Among them was the track titled Downhearted Blues, which was wildly popular and sold an estimated 800,000 copies, propelling Bessie Smith into the blues spotlight. With her rich, powerful voice, Bessie Smith soon became a successful recording artist and toured extensively. Going forward with an idea presented by her brother and business manager, Clarence Smith, eventually brought a custom railroad car for her traveling troupe to travel and sleep in. Bessie Smith also collaborated with Louis Armstrong on several tunes, including Cold in the Hand Blues and I Ain't Gonna Play No Second Fiddle and St. Louis Blues. By the end of the 1920s, Bessie Smith was the highest paid black performer of her day and had earned herself the title Empress of the Blues. Her most popular song was in 1929, Nobody Knows You When You're Down and Out, written by Jimmy Cox 6 years earlier. Bessie Smith's version of the song, released in September 29, was early presented on the stock market crash that happened just two weeks later. And the song would become the basis of it for a short film later on. However, at the height of her success, her career began to flounder, due in part to the financial ravages of the Great Depression and the change in cultural styles. By the end of 1931, Bessie Smith had stopped working with Columbia Records altogether. Although a dedicated performer, she adapted her repertoire and continued to tour. In 1933, Bessie Smith was contacted by producer John Hammond to make new recordings, which hinted at the coming swing era. On September 26, 1937, Bessie Smith was en route to a show in Memphis, Tennessee, with a companion of many years, Richard Morgan, when he sideswiped a truck and lost control of the car. Smith was thrown from the car, badly injured. She died of her wounds in a Clarksdale, Mississippi hospital. She was only 43 years old. Her funeral was held in Philadelphia a week later, with thousands coming to pay their respects. She was buried in Mount Lawn Cemetery in Sharon Hill, Pennsylvania. And so, here she is, the Empress of the Blues, Bessie Smith.
Once I lived a life of a millionaire, spending my money I didn't care. I carried my friends out for a good time, buying bootleg liquor, champagne and wine. When I began to fall so low, I didn't have a friend and no place to go. So if I ever get my hand on a dollar again, I'm gonna hold on to it till them eagles grin. Nobody knows you when you're down and out. In my pocket, not one penny, and my friends, I haven't any. But if I ever get on my feet again, then I'll meet my long lost friend. It's mighty strange, without a doubt. Nobody knows you when you're down and out. I mean, when you're down and out.
Bessie Smith, the Empress of the Blues. Nobody wants you when you're down and out. There are so many blues singers out there that we could talk about, but I'm going to bring our program somewhat to a close today with one of the most famous ones. His name was Riley B. King, known to us as B.B. King, of Itabena, Mississippi. He was born September 16, 1925. His young parents divorced when he was 5, and his mother died when he was 9, leaving him to be raised by his maternal grandmother. B.B. King dropped out of school in the 10th grade, although he vigorously studied math and languages until late in his life, and earned a living picking cotton for a penny a pound, singing gospel songs on a local street corner, studying music under cousin Bucca White. He married at 17. He said, "I guess I was looking for love because I never had anybody I truly believed loved me." It was the first of two failed marriages. However, in 1948, King was living in Memphis, Tennessee, working as a tractor driver, when he landed a gig at Sonny Boy Williamson's local radio show. That led to a job at the popular West Mississippi juke joint, playing 6 nights a week, earning $12 a night. In Memphis, he met artists like Louis Jordan and T-Bone Walker, where he heard the electric guitar for the first time. T-Bone was to me that sound of being in heaven, he said. He scored his first number one hit in 1951 with the 3 o'clock blues. Dozens more followed in the coming decades, including 1954's You Upset Me, Baby, 1960's Sweet 16. One night in 1949, King was performing at a dance in Twist, Arkansas, when two men started fighting over a woman named Lucille and set the club on fire by knocking over the kerosene stove. The place was evacuated, but B.B. King rushed back inside to retrieve his guitar, which he dubbed Lucille. Despite being married twice, King said that Lucille was his true love, and he called every guitar he owned after that Lucille. As he wrote, Lucille is real. When I play her, it's like hearing words, and of course, naturally, I hear cries. I'd be playing sometimes as I play. It seems like it almost has a conversation with me. It tells you something. It communicates with me. In the 60s, the success of blues-influenced British bands helped broaden King's appeal. He began to perform for white rock audiences with acts like the Rolling Stones and Eric Clapton. Around this time, his sound started to change. When Rolling Stone included King among the 100 greatest guitarists, Billy Gibson of ZZ Top said, quote, there's a turning point around the time of 1965, live at the Regal, when his sound took on a personality that was untampered by with today. This roundish tone where the front pickup is out of phrase with the rear pickup, and BB still plays a Gibson amplifier that's long out of production. His sound comes from that combination. It's just BB. Some of King's greatest recordings are live albums, including Live in Japan and Live at Cook County Jail, which showcase his masterful delivery and playful old school showmanship. In the late 60s, B.B. King moved to New York and started working with the manager, who helped curb his gambling habits and got King playing larger venues and festival dates. He started having hits again, including the 1968's Paying the Cost is to Be Boss, the 1969 country commentary, When I Sing the Blues, and The Thrill is Gone. Says B.B. King, blues purists never cared for me. I don't worry about it. I think if it's this way. When I made 3 o'clock blues, they were not there. The people out there made the tune, and blues purists just wrote about it. The people is who I'm trying to satisfy. King's style, marked by his signature ringing vibrato tones, became a hallmark of blues playing, imitated by everyone from Eric Clapton to Buddy Guy. I've always liked the steel guitar. I also love guys that play the bottleneck, King said, but I could never do it. I never made it to do it, and I don't want it. So every time I pick up a guitar, I'd shake my hand and trill it a bit. For some strange reason, my ears would say to me, that sounds similar to what those guys were doing. I can't pick up the guitar now without doing it. So that's how I got into making my sound. It was nothing pretty, just trying to please myself. And that is the sound. And so, we're going to listen to B.B. King.
I was in love
B.B. King. And so, as the blues took on its new life, so did the African Americans who moved around the country. The African American urban population changed between 1910 up to the 1940s. The population grew from 16% to 27% African Americans in the country. Literacy rose from 18% in 1870 to 69% by 1910. Population shifts between 1910 and 1920s were evident in cities like New York, where black people moved in to a rate of 66% to increase the population. In Philadelphia, African-American population grew by 58%. In Chicago, by 148%. And in Detroit, the African-American population grew by 661% in a period of 10 years and continued to grow after World War II. So as more African-Americans left the South to go to the cities of the North, the music also changed, and so did the spiritual left us for the gospel, but also came the secular song of the blues. But also of importance was that the blues influenced African-American literature, especially during the Harlem Renaissance, which was from 1918 to 1937. Black writers such as Langston Hughes, Sterling Brown, and Gene Toomer valued the blues as an indigenous art form of oppressed people, a secular equivalent of the spirituals, and an antidote to bourgeoisie black assimilation. And so we come to an end of our program today, talking about another art form that came out of the spiritual that influenced the gospel, and that is the blues. And this is Marvin Curtis, your host for Lift Every Voice, Celebrate the African American Spirit, sponsored by the South Bend Symphony Orchestra here on WUBS 89.7. Have a great day.